Mayo, I think some congratulations are in order for you this Thursday. Is that right?
Oh, shucks. I mean.
Oh, shucks. You got your driver's license, finally. You're legal to drive in the United Kingdom on the wrong side of the road.
I mean, I said I was trying to do it before I was 30, and I've come in about 5 months early, so.
Ahead of schedule.
Ahead of schedule. Success.
It only took you, what, you scheduled the test like 7 months ago?
Yeah, it was
and then
like
you finally
February.
Completed it? Jesus.
If you're in America, you probably don't understand, but like over here, the backlog of tests is ridiculous. So you have to schedule it like months and months in advance. And the driving test in England's like one of the, it's not the hardest in the world, but it's more difficult than the US. There's more stuff you've got to do. It's more complicated. But yeah, just getting the test is an ordeal unto itself because you've got to like wake up at 5 a.m. and fight over like five tests are available because they've still got a huge backlog from like COVID and stuff. So if like, let's say I failed on Friday, the next test I would have been able to get was like March or February or whatever. And then you can sometimes like fight for cancellations and all that nonsense, but it's a lot less stressful if you can just pass in the first attempt because you don't have to worry about all of that. Like in the old times when it was fine, it was like, okay, well, if you failed or whatever, you could, you know, have a couple more lessons and book again for later in the month or something. But that's just not feasible these days because of the stupid backlogs and stuff. So, but yeah, we started basically this initiative around my birthday in February, had to do theory tests and stuff like a month. And then I've been having like driving lessons every week since then. And yeah, happily passed last Friday, first time. So I was relieved. And now I'm on the car hunt, I guess.
So you're actually going to buy a car? Because at first you weren't sure.
Yeah, probably. Nothing fancy.
That's going to be an exciting chapter of this podcast. Mayo does the car search.
Yeah, because even if I get like an old cheap car, I probably want to get CarPlay in it somehow. So probably have to go aftermarket or something. But because I'm really bad at directions. If I don't have a GPS, I'm in trouble. So
we'll look forward to that. iOS 18.2 Beta 1 is here, and it includes the next wave of all of the Apple Intelligence stuff. So just the highlights first, and we'll dive in. Image Playground, Genmoji, ChatGPT integration, some new writing tools updates, the visual intelligence feature for iPhone 16, the Image Wand, and more regions for English. So Australia, Canada, New Zealand, South Africa, and the United Kingdom. The big stuff here is obviously the image generation stuff. Image Playground, I think, is interesting. So this is the thing where there's a dedicated Image Playground app, and you can go in there and you can choose a person, choose a suggested style, choose animation or illustration for the actual look of the picture, and then kind of just type in what you want, and it generates an image in that style. Mayo, you haven't tried this because you don't have a compatible iPhone and you don't run macOS betas, but in my... I mean, we should preface this by saying it's been out for 18 hours, roughly. But in my first impressions, I mean, it's cool and the images you can generate are fun. But the practical implications of it, beyond just being kind of something fun you can play with and use with your friends, there's not much to it. And I think that's kind of the goal.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is, right? These Facebook Messenger and stuff has AI integration when you can do image generation. And has anyone used it for anything practical? I don't think so. It's just... you know, you're having a chat and then maybe you're bored or whatever and you want to put a fun image in there to maybe represent what you're talking about, or you just want to basically do a caricature of one of your friends. Well, here you can do that. And Image Playgrounds is really centered around taking someone's like profile picture and editing it a bit, right? Because it really pushes you to select a person to base. You can just do like themes or just type in text of like any object and it will generate something. But the UI is kind of set up for you to like use your face or use someone else you know from your contacts, like profile image, and then to kind of manipulate it. And at least in this version, in this first iteration, you can only do like one person, so you have to choose like one face to be the kind of focus, and it will do it from like shoulders up. It doesn't go for like full body humans from what we've seen. And if you've got like a group of people, it'll only ever do like one person. But basically you can make like little caricatures or little jokes about someone you know, or you can import any photo from your photo library, so you can find celebrities and do it and stuff too. And there doesn't seem to be too many guardrails around like what you can generate. They have like some basic filtering, so you can't, if you ask it about sensitive material, just deny to do it. But it's not like it stops you from making a photo of a president, for instance. Like you can just import that picture and it won't know that it's like a famous person. It'll just let you get on with it and manipulate it.
The biggest limitation, and I guess this has been the case since they announced it at WWDC, like you said, is that only one person can be in the picture. Like, it would be ideal or fun or cool to be able to say, create a picture of me and Benjamin Mayo talking into a microphone together. And that's not an option. You'd have to create two separate images with both of us, or with each of us. And I don't know if that's a compute limitation, because all of this, I think, is being done on device. There's no server component to Image Playground or any of the image generation stuff in Apple Intelligence. So I'm curious to see how this evolves over time. And Craig Federighi did an interview with Joanna Stern at the Wall Street Journal this week, and it was a really good interview. I'll put the link in the show notes. But one of the things he said about Image Playground and made clear that it's not meant to generate photorealistic images, right? It's not meant to do what ChatGPT can do or what DALL-E can do, any of the other image generation tools. And I think in the past, we speculated that obviously that was coming down the road for Apple Intelligence. But with how cartoonish, how clearly AI generated the images in Image Playground are, like playing with them and seeing them now, I kind of wonder if that's not the case. Like, I don't know if Apple's ever going to take this beyond into photorealistic images.
Forever is a long time, right?
Like, on an infinite time scale, anything's possible. But
I mean, obviously, they've intentionally done it at the beginning as let's do stuff that is intentionally avoiding photorealism, because you can only pick between animation and illustration styles. It's not even like you can pick a realistic style and it just does a bad job of making them, right? Like, they've turned it off, so you can only do animation and illustration. The only way to make photorealism is via like the ChatGPT integration, which is not part of Image Playgrounds. You have to do it through like the Writing Tools Composer, where you can make images using the ChatGPT stuff. But Apple's personal image generation does not attempt to do photorealism at all. Not that I don't think it would be possible, because I don't think it's that hard these days to, like, if you have a server farm, you can run a backend model that can generate photos. There's open source ones, you can make your own. I'm sure Apple could do it. They've clearly, for this first version, been like, we're not going to dive into that. They've made some statements about not wanting to disrupt the sincerity and honesty of a photo that's been taken, right? Aside from like the minor cleanup stuff you can do.
Even the cleanup stuff in the interview with Craig Federighi, he said there was a lot of debate internally about whether they should do that, whether it's okay to say remove a water bottle from a picture, because that water bottle was in the picture. It was part of the scene. It was part of the environment. And there was debate about whether cleanup should be able to do that, or whether cleanup, I guess, should even exist. And it's clearly they followed the demand from what users want and what users expect.
I mean,
nowadays.
He said that, right? He said there's a lot of demand for these features,
right,
and they
yeah.
ended up doing cleanup. I think yeah. there will probably in time be demand for photorealist image generation for, you know, if you're writing a blog post, it's nice to be able to have artwork at the top you don't have to buy, right? Like, ignoring the fact that you're going to take people out of business or artists out of business. If you're making documents or websites or anything, stock imagery is a market that exists today. I don't think it's too far removed to have like a computer make stock imagery for you. It's just like clip art from Microsoft Word 2003, but taken to a new extreme. So I think in time they'll probably get there in one way or the other, but at least for now they're playing it safe and just doing the illustration stuff. And there's this Image Playgrounds and Gemini, all the Apple image generation happens on device. There's no server component at all, so they can't. You need much bigger, beefier computation to make photorealistic images. So if they did want to do that, they'd have to host it on the servers, maybe using private cloud compute, right? If they're only doing it on device, you're never going to get away from this kind of like cartoony 3D, you know, 3D illustration kind of effects. But that's how it is today. And I think, do I see any real like long-term conceivable use for Image Playgrounds? Not really. It kind of falls into the, you know, Memoji, Animoji kind of group of features where people might do it occasionally and it's a bit of fun. And it's kind of an impressive demo, right, when you do it once or twice. But does it have long-term longevity? Are people going to be rushing back to do it? Probably not. And there's plenty of other image generation tools that exist out there, including ones that will do even better animation styles or art styles, 3D, you know, photorealistic. If people want to generate images, they'll probably end up just using those. Like, I don't think there's anything to truly differentiate Image Playground from any of the other competitors out there, but Apple did it. I think it's fine. You know, you might have a group chat one day and want a fun image to throw in there, and there you go.
I encourage everyone to look at the chapter art right now, because I used Image Playground to generate a picture of Mayo driving a car. So that's my example picture for Image Playground this week. I think it did a pretty good job of representing what you look like.
Did you use my like standard like social media profile picture thing?
Yep, that's the only picture anybody has of you.
Well, I'm not a private guy, but I try not to have too many photos out in the world. I mean, I don't take many pictures of myself anyway, so it's not like I'm sitting on an incredible library of images. But yeah, I don't think it looks. I mean, it makes me look a bit kiddie, right? But
yeah,
it's not miles away from a decent shot.
It's missing all the gray in your hair.
Yeah,
I would say,
it's a new development there. And I would argue about like the nose and stuff. But like, you can. It's not like it's a generic person, right? That's got black hair. Yeah. It is at least has resemblance. And I've seen some others that have even more resemblance, like Michael Potok, who's one of our writers on staff. Yeah. He did one, and it really looked like him. I was like, wow, that is very close.
The other image generation thing too is the Genmoji, and this is something I think we're both in agreement of. This is going to be popular. This is going to be the Apple intelligence feature when it launches, because it's integrated directly into the keyboard everywhere you're typing. And what I didn't really realize is, so you go to the emoji search and you start typing something, and if there's no emoji for what you're looking for, it's right there. You just tap a button and hit generate emoji, yep. And it just makes it. I didn't realize how deeply integrated that would be.
Yep, it's right there.
So you
there.
Go and you type chef's kiss, and there's no chef's kiss emoji. Just generate it with a single tap.
And it's filling a need that people want, because people always complain about they want an emoji for this or an emoji for that. And every time there's an iOS update that has new emoji, there's huge demand for like, what's the new images I can send to people? And this is a natural extension of that, where you search for an emoji, as people do all the time, all day long. And if a built-in emoji doesn't exist, it's one more button, it will start making it for you. Like, it's going to be hugely popular for that purpose. And people are going to send it to their friends and be like, oh, how'd you get that emoji? Well, I had the new iPhone and I could generate it on my phone. I just typed in what I wanted for. And you can incorporate like photos and people's faces into them. So you can have like personalized human emotion emojis as well. So the image playgrounds really pushes on the use a picture of yourself, but you can do it in the Genmoji generator too. So you, like, if you look on our 9to5 Mac YouTube page, Jeff Benjamin did a walkthrough of all the iOS 18.2 features. He makes like an emoji featuring his face in a, you know, fireman suit or whatever. Like, it's going to be popular. People are going to get the phone, they're going to get the update, they're going to make their like 5 to 10 emoji that have been longing to exist forever, right? Of like, oh, I wish I had an emoji for this and it doesn't exist. They're going to make them. It adds it to your keyboard. It will show them in the recents. It'll also put them in like the stickers library so you can get to them later. And then people will send them naturally as they go. And if you're typing them in iMessage, they can be typed in line just like normal emojis. You can have text, but it's not like a separate thing that has to be sent. It can just be directly in line. Third-party apps can theoretically do that too if they update to support the necessary APIs. Unlikely. I don't think many people are going to actually bother to do that and support it, but maybe it's at least possible that Instagram could let you like post comments that include Genmoji, for instance. But even as an iMessage feature alone, I think it'd be pretty popular.
Can you use Genmoji for tapbacks in iOS 18?
Yep.
Really? Wow. That's pretty good. They thought of everything. I mean, it really is really well integrated. It works. You don't have an Apple Intelligence phone, but I can still send you a Genmoji and you can save it on your device and use it, which is really cool.
Yeah, and the inline rendering will work on any iOS 18 device. So you don't, it's not even like when iOS 18.2 comes out, you've got to wait for all your friends to update to 0.2. You can just immediately start sending them and they will show correctly as of iOS 18.0. Oh, and you made a pumpkin spice Genmoji and sent it to me. I can, even though I'm on a 14 Pro, I can then long press on the text message. I can see emoji details and it will show the Genmojis that are included in that message, including the phrase you used to make it. And it's one button and I've now got the pumpkin spice emoji on my phone and I can send that back to you or send it to anybody I want to. So there's like a virality there that they've thought about, which is nice. And you don't even need an Apple Intelligence capable phone to send the Genmoji. You just need an AI device to create it.
I joked that I was going to charge people $5 to make their custom emoji if they don't have an Apple Intelligence phone and then send it to them. That's my business model.
At least right now, the Mac OS, like Genmoji is on iPad OS, but it's not on the Mac OS beta. I think basically just like the UI isn't that finished for the emoji keyboard selection, because it's not like, you know, the like inserting emoji on the Mac is a bit crusty and old fashioned, right? Like it's not super modern. So I think they're probably still working on that and that'll come out sometime next year.
Then we have Image Wand, which I haven't used yet, but it's primarily or only in the Notes app, and you can have a rough sketch and then you circle it and it'll generate an image playground image basically of that sketch that's more polished than what you drew. Or if you don't even want to draw the sketch, you can just circle and create an image, and it'll use context from your surrounding text and notes to generate something.
And you can type in text. It's like a mini image playground, like integrated into the canvas. Oh, by the way, the if you're using Image Wand, you get a sketch style in terms of the image that's created. But in Image Playground, there's no sketch style as an option. You only have animation illustration. When they first showed this at WWDC, there were three style options: animation, illustration, and sketch. But right now, for some reason, sketch isn't included in the Image Playground context. I presume it will come out later. But right now, if you want to do sketch image generation, you have to go through the Image Wand UI.
For iPhone 16, iPhone 16 Pro, there is the visual intelligence feature. So this is where you long press on the camera control, take a picture of something around you. So example, I took a picture of an iPod that was laying on my desk. Then I sent it to ChatGPT, and it told me this was either an iPod Nano 5th generation or 6th generation, some details about it. You can also send it to Google, or you can use Apple's own image recognition technology to tell you more about what's in the image too, like a picture of a dog breed, for example.
Yeah, so Apple's like visual lookup stuff is integrated into the visual intelligence thing, but I don't think it's like any better or any worse, right? It's just whatever it used to be able to detect from like the Photos app when you take a picture and it has it there. It just also now includes that in the visual intelligence UI. If you take a picture of a poster, it will like scan the text. You can translate the text. You can get the event details out and add it to your calendar if you want. But the main draw of the visual intelligence thing is the basically shortcut buttons to a Google Lens UI where it can do like similar images from Google, or it will just send that photo to ChatGPT to interpret for you and you can follow up with additional commentary. This is quite literally just like Apple incorporating third-party services and then having it as part of the system feature. There's nothing new brought to the table here apart from that it's, I guess, built in and you can access it quickly just by holding down the camera control button. But there's no real reason why it would have to be iPhone 16 exclusive. They could have just made it a software feature for any phone, right? I don't think it even depends on any of the other AI models that Apple has. Like, there's no generative stuff going on at all. It's just sending it out to web services in every case. So they made it an iPhone 16 exclusive feature, but it really doesn't have to be. Does it need to, like, this is a clear example of like Apple's own AI capabilities do not right now have world knowledge, and they can't answer open-ended questions or do multimodal interpretation of photos. So what do? Well, they just have a nice ask and search button, and it goes to Google and OpenAI directly. And it seems like Apple gets good financial terms for this stuff, and I don't know what Google thinks it's getting in return for just basically putting Google Lens in the iPhone with no advertising, but Apple may have struck the deal and it works, so customers will use it. And apart from the fact that it has a Google logo and an OpenAI logo, it's basically like it's built in, right? Like, you have to approve it because of privacy and you have to allow it to happen. But otherwise, it basically just works. In the fullness of time, i.e. across the next many years, I don't see why Apple couldn't build out their own capabilities for this and they wouldn't need to rely on third parties. But for a version one release where it's not like super integrated into your daily life, it's just it's kind of like mode you can go into and find out information about a photo in front of you, I think it's fine to depend on third-party providers. It basically gives the same result.
It is funny seeing so many people share the results from visual intelligence and being like, wow, Apple really knocked it out of the park with this. This is great. And it's like, well, again, it's basically just ChatGPT. You've been able to do this for a long time just using the ChatGPT app.
Yeah, download the ChatGPT app, download the Google Lens app. There's your same functionality. But there's huge power in it being by default, just you just hold a button on the side of the phone and there it is.
Speaking of ChatGPT integration, this adds it to Siri. So if you ask Siri a question and it wants to pass it on to ChatGPT, Apple specifically keeps saying for world knowledge information, you can do so. The question we had when Apple announced this at WWDC was whether you'd have to approve each and every time for a question or a query to be sent to ChatGPT. And that's the case by default, but you can go into settings and disable that prompt, which makes the experience dramatically better. Other than that, it's basically just like you're talking to ChatGPT, just in the native Siri interface. It's, again, the huge power of natively integrating something into something people already use.
And remember, you can do it for free. So by default, it will be free. You can log in with your paid ChatGPT account to get higher usage limits, but the day-to-day experience, I think people can use completely for free and not really worry about it. So it's kind of incredible that like the deal they got here, basically you don't even need to make an account, right? You don't even need to like sign up. You just click accept and then boom, you're using ChatGPT through the iPhone for free. So it's a pretty nice, sweet deal that Apple managed to finagle there. And it works exactly as I was hoping it to, where it basically just seems like any request or most requests that would previously say, here's what I found on the web and just give you like five Google results, now it will just shuttle it off to ChatGPT instead. So you get a bit more of a meaningful answer. All of the, you know, the Siri UI and the Siri app and the Siri system is designed to be like one-shot actions, right? Like you ask a question, it gives you a result. You can maybe follow up a little bit, but it's not designed to be an open-ended chatbot. And the same is true here. But if you have a trivia question that Siri just would throw its hands up before and be like, I don't have a clue what you're on about, now you get a decent shot at actually getting a decent answer because it can shuttle it off to ChatGPT instead and speak that result to you.
And it's almost as if Apple kind of actively discourages you from signing into a ChatGPT account, because in the settings app where you do that, it says that if you aren't signed into a ChatGPT account, all of your communication is private and encrypted, blah, blah. But if you sign in with a ChatGPT account, you're beholden to the OpenAI terms and conditions, which are vastly different than Apple's own terms and conditions. And the interface thing, too, is interesting because it's almost, it reminds me of the writing tools thing, which I've talked about a lot, where Apple is cramming so much functionality into what's basically a pop-up menu. And it makes me want, a separate writing tools app or something more than just like that pop-up interface.
It probably needs to be like a full screen thing rather than like a half height panel. Yeah.
And the same thing applies to interacting with ChatGPT with Siri. And then also, even if you sign into a ChatGPT account and you ask Siri something and you get shuttled off to ChatGPT, that conversation history, at least right now, does not sync back to your ChatGPT account, right? So you can't start a conversation with Siri and ChatGPT, then go to the ChatGPT app to continue that same conversation. There's no sync between each of those interfaces. So I hope that's something that changes, because right now, for me anyway, I still will probably get more use out of having just my action button on my iPhone linked to the ChatGPT app. But again, it's the power too of having quick access for everybody, regardless of whether they actively use ChatGPT in other parts of their life.
And they also put ChatGPT in the writing tools, right? So that cluttered writing tools panel now even has more options, because it has a describe your change, like text field at the top, which is Apple Intelligence powered. And basically before you'd have those buttons, you know, make it friendlier, make it more serious, blah, 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 blah. But now you can just type in freeform a description of the kind of change you want to make. Make this sound like a poem, you know, make it sound like a pirate's written it, like, and press go and it will transform your text. Or if you scroll down to the bottom of writing tools, there's now a new compose button, which shuttles you off to ChatGPT, and you can do like from scratch text generation using the ChatGPT backend.
And I think, I know there is image generation too as part of that compose window too. I asked it to generate me a picture of a baseball on a baseball field, and it did, and it's a photorealistic image. It's Apple not doing photorealism itself, but saying if you want to do it, you can do it via this little compose button handled by OpenAI. It's there if you want it.
So yeah, like if they were super, and if they had a philosophy against it, I feel like they wouldn't let that happen, right?
But yeah,
they don't care that much. They're like, okay, if you want to use ChatGPT server capacity to make photorealistic images, go right ahead. We'll let you do it and integrate and give you the result directly back in line. Again, this stuff is, you could do it just by going to the ChatGPT app, but it will get usage because it's now super more built in and super just exposed in a better surface in all of the applications much more natively. I think it's great. It would be even better if Apple could offer it themselves rather than having to depend on the third party and the, you know, at least question mark of privacy around that stuff. But it's better than nothing. Like, and it's not like a leapfrog compared to just having the ChatGPT app installed, but it's definitely a convenience. It's like a system extension, right? It seems good to me.
It seems really good. It seems the strategy with 18.1, I think, was doing things that only Apple can do, like notification summaries, like adding stuff directly into the Mail app, adding writing tools around the interface. And then 18.2 is kind of extending beyond that with more broad AI features, more of the things people think of when they think of this new wave of artificial intelligence, like the image recognition stuff, like the compose button, like the image generation stuff, yeah. Image Playground, Genmoji.
Genmoji is pretty unique because, like, although you could get, you could go to ChatGPT.com and tell it to make an image that looks like an emoji. You'd never mm-hmm. do that, right? Because then it would yeah. make like an image file and it'd be weird. And like the fact that it's like built into the keyboard makes it super compelling. But the other stuff, you're completely right. It's like 18.1 was like, what can we do in the system experiences to like AI-ify it with stuff like mm-hmm. the quick replies and the yep. notification summaries? And then 18.2 is like, people expect when you talk about AI that you can make images and you can talk to ChatGPT and have like a chatbot experience. And so I guess we'll deliver that in a, you know, a refined, sleek way with pretty UI and rainbow effects all over the shop. But basically stuff that people have been doing if you went to find the apps manually through the App Store
yeah.
for a year already.
And there are going to be a lot of people who download iOS 18.1 next week and think that they can talk to Siri like a chatbot because of the new Siri interface and because of the type to Siri interface. And that is not the case. That is all included in 18.2. Going back to what me and you have been saying since forever, we're launching the new Siri design with 18.1 may prove to be a mistake, but we will see.
Just wait 2 more months and yeah. you can ship it with ChatGPT integrated, and it makes way more sense. I mean, ideally, you'd wait until you got the in-app actions and all that stuff yeah. and the personal context Siri, which isn't coming until 0.3, 0.4. We don't know yet. They haven't said. But at the very least, just don't add like a type to Siri option when you can't type to Siri and actually get a response in every case. So yeah, that's a big mistake, but that's how it's going to ship because 18.1's a release candidate and all the animations are in there and it's coming out next week. But if you actually want to type to Siri, wait for 18.2 because then you can actually get a response in every case because it will fall back to ChatGPT.
Other than Apple Intelligence in iOS 18.2, the new Mail app design is here. So this is where it sorts your emails on device into primary, transactions, updates, and promotions categories. This works really well in my 18 hours of testing, and you can actually recategorize things too. So if you get an email and it goes into the like the updates tab, but you want it in primary, you can just long press and move it. For example, I've used this as an example before, but the daily digest email that we get from the post office here in the United States, that went into the updates tab for me, but I want that in my primary tab, so I just moved it right over. And presumably it's smart enough to continue doing that with all future emails from that sender. For day-to-day use for me, this does kind of have the same problem as the Apple Intelligence priority sorting thing in the Mail app, where we get so much email to our tips at 9to5mac.com email. Some of those are incredibly stupid. Some of them are important, very important. And I don't necessarily trust this system to properly categorize them. Like, I don't want to miss something because this on-device intelligent thing put it in the transactions tab when it should have been in the primary tab. So I'll see more about how accurate the sorting is over time. But first impressions are good.
Yeah, and it'd be nice if you could like set certain like two like addresses to be like, oh, don't never categorize these, just put these in primary, you know, or stuff like that. But some of those secondary toggles aren't there yet.
What I haven't realized is whether it factors in VIP to that system. Like if I set a sender as a VIP, if that always goes into primary. Because for example, I have all emails with @apple.com VIP, and so I see them right away. And I haven't realized if that goes into primary by default or not, but I'll have to check on that.
It should if it doesn't, because that makes sense. And to be clear, the Mail app will come to non-Apple Intelligence phones like mine, but right now the 18.2 beta is only released for Apple Intelligence phones. It's just like how 18.1 was rolled out, where it was like iPhone 15, iPhone 16 exclusive for a couple of releases, and then they brought it out for everybody. So with 18.2, you'll probably have beta 1, beta 2 again be AI focused, as in only released for those compatible devices. Then it will be open season and everybody will update to it through the beta process.
And two, on 18.2, there's a waitlist in addition to the normal Apple Intelligence waitlist. There's a waitlist for the image generation stuff. And whereas for the Apple Intelligence initial waitlist, when 18.1 beta 1 was released in July, that waitlist seemed more of them testing the waitlist system itself, right? So you pretty much got in within 30 minutes at most. But with image generation, that waitlist, I've seen people who requested access right when the beta came out yesterday who are still waiting today. There's clearly a bigger backlog or a more strict, they're letting fewer people into the image generation stuff than they were the first Apple Intelligence features.
Yeah, and as we said, I don't think any of the image generation happens on server, so you can't really blame server capacity. I think they're just being really cautious and they're like watching as it rolls out to make sure you can't like accidentally make it generate pictures of like Nazis or something, you know, like they don't, yeah. They're trying to avoid the sensitive subjects. So they're just being really careful and being like, we'll give a few people. Then we're just going to wait. Okay, no one's abusing this in any way that we hadn't conceived. Okay, now we can roll out to more people. I don't know if it will continue to be like that when it ships publicly, but at least over the beta season right now, they're being a bit more hesitant with it, which is fine.
18.2 adds a new default app section in the settings app, including the option to set defaults for messaging and calling apps worldwide. So this was initially thought that it would only come to the European Union, but it's worldwide. There are still other things that are exclusive to the EU. Then voice memos, the version of the app that was shown at the iPhone 16 event for layering multiple tracks, that version of the app is now available in 18.2. And that layer feature is only on the iPhone 16 Pro. 18.2 is a big update, and this is just beta 1. And I assume we'll see more features added, maybe some of them removed. We never know over the next 2 months-ish, because we're expecting this to be released to everyone.
Yeah, and we haven't seen the TVOS beta or anything else yet, so some of the features we're waiting for there should show up once the 0.2 start for real, which will probably be in about a couple of weeks after 18.1 ships.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty good. Like, I saw some commentary that was like, this is the real Apple Intelligence update. And I don't necessarily agree with that because...
No.
Like, I think this is the Apple Intelligence update that has the flashier things where people can, like, make an image and they're like, look at this, it's visually different, you know? The most useful Apple Intelligence features they put in 0.1. The Siri stuff with the personal content stuff is the most, potentially the most impactful if it works well. But in terms of what ships in 2024... They put the most useful stuff in 0.1, so that's like notification summaries, email summaries, quick replies, priority email, and the like photo memory stuff. 18.2 is where they added the fun stuff, you know, with image generation, Gemoji, ChatGPT integration is really nice. Everyone that kind of said like in September, oh, it's so stupid that they haven't had a fractured rollout of this thing and they're launching the iPhone 16 without any Apple Intelligence features. It's like, but now they're like, oh, this is great. All these features are here. So, you know, it's what a difference a month makes, you know, like, and of course this isn't actually publicly shipping until probably December. But it's only a matter of months really between, it's not like they're promising vaporware, you know, like all of the stuff for 2024 is now officially at least testable. So I think Apple got some flack when it wasn't really deserved. It would be obviously ideal if they could have shipped everything in September, but clearly that wasn't possible. And this secondary rollout is not bad in the scheme of things.
No, I think the two buckets we broke it down into just a little bit ago are totally fair. And ultimately, I think they are the right call. And they show, again, the stuff in 18.1 shows what Apple and only Apple can do because they own the platform. Whereas 18.2 is more kind of almost off-the-shelf stuff that is not particularly native to Apple's platform. So I think they made the right decision in prioritizing 18.1 versus 18.2. Just hopefully that Siri personal context stuff and in-app actions come sooner rather than later once we get to 2025.
I'm kind of anticipating it will be in like the beta flow in January or February, you know?
It might not ship
until March or April, but I think it'll be testable and then... Once we go out the other side of Christmas, one other thing I will add: the ChatGPT stop for Siri is obviously really useful. Do you think there's any generative AI going on there that would stop that being available on other devices? Don't think so, right?
The only thing I could think of is whatever is making the determination about whether it gets sent off to ChatGPT or not. But it doesn't seem. I mean, I don't know anything about programming or any of that stuff.
It doesn't seem like it'd be that sophisticated of a filter.
Exactly. Yeah.
The way I've looked at it, it kind of just seems like whenever Siri would otherwise go, I don't know, or here's results on the web, but it can just pass it off to ChatGPT instead, right? It doesn't seem to be much more complicated than that. And so it really wants me for them to like do it on like the HomePod, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'd love, where do people ask the most trivia questions? They ask them to their smart speakers, I think, a lot of the time. And right now, the HomePod has no Apple Intelligence story. And you can kind of understand it because it doesn't have, you know, the processing power to run models and stuff like that and work and have a personal context engine, keep a semantic index and do all that stuff. But like, that's great and all, but I don't really need that on the HomePod. That can all be on the phone and my more powerful devices. Mm-hmm. But basic trivia questions, just let the HomePod go and ask ChatGPT and speak out the answer. Like, it would solve a lot of problems. But right now, nothing on the horizon for that.
I mean, the other side of that too is visual intelligence on iPhone 16. Yes, it seems like it could come to iPhone 15 or even earlier because it's just passing it off to ChatGPT or Google. But also, Vision Pro has cameras. You're always looking at things in Vision Pro.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a visual intelligence element to that too. And right now there's not.
Happy Hour this week is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh delivers fresh, high-quality, pre-portioned ingredients to your door with easy-to-follow recipe instructions so you can make delicious meals easily. And right now you can get 10 free meals. Go to hellofresh.com/freehappyhour. More details at the end. Fall brings with it the tastiest season yet with farm-fresh produce and easy-to-cook, autumn-inspired recipes. We all know that home-cooked meals are so much better for you, but you don't always have the time to do it. But with HelloFresh handling all the hassles of meal planning, shopping, and most of the prep work, it's easier than ever to get dinner on the table. There's an ever-changing menu of over 50 recipes to choose from each week. Plus, get desserts, breakfasts, and snack items from the HelloFresh market. Just pick your meals and your delivery date. Meals arrive on the date that you specify with easy-to-follow recipe cards. And with pre-portioned ingredients, you'll never waste money on excess food. Now, chance to know HelloFresh sent you some recipes to try. So how did you find it?
Yes, they did. And one of my favorites from the last batch that they sent was a smoky tacos meal. And like you said, Mayo, one of my favorite things about HelloFresh is getting everything you need in the box. So you never end up in a situation where you're making dinner and you get halfway through and you realize you're missing a crucial ingredient. And then you're left deciding whether you scrap the meal altogether and just order takeout or whether you go to the store and get that ingredient. And with HelloFresh, that's never a problem. I mean, the kit for the smoky tacos had the meat, it had the tortillas, it had some guacamole, cilantro, seasoning, sauce, everything you need to make a good meal was just right in the box. So for me and my wife, I know HelloFresh is one of our favorite things to have for dinner. It's versatile, it's easy, it's convenient, and most importantly, it tastes very, very good.
From hearty dinners to game day snacks, HelloFresh has a variety of flavors to perfectly accompany the current fall season. And yep, that includes pumpkin spice. To top it all off, they have a really great offer at the moment for you, the Happy Hour listener. Get 10 free meals at hellofresh.com/freehappyhour. Applied across 7 boxes, new subscribers only, varies by plan. That's 10 free HelloFresh meals just by going to hellofresh.com/freehappyhour. One more time, hellofresh.com/freehappyhour. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Thanks to HelloFresh for sponsoring the show.
So at the iPhone event in September, Apple announced its 3 new hearing health features coming to AirPods Pro. They said focused on prevention, awareness, and assistance. That's the hearing protection, hearing test, and hearing aid features. And it's now confirmed that those features will launch with iOS 18.1 next week. I was able to try the hearing test feature and the hearing aid feature, but primarily the hearing test feature with the latest AirPods Pro firmware and iOS 18.1 RC. And it's really impressive. It works just like you'd expect it to, where it plays the sounds and you do your left ear, then your right ear. You tap the screen when you hear a sound. And it's longer and more in-depth than I thought. I mean, like most people, I think I haven't taken an actual hearing test since like elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of surprised me at how long it is. But at the same time, it being so long and in-depth really helps you think that you're getting an actual result. Like you're getting something that you would get if you went to the doctor to get a hearing test done. I got like little to no hearing loss, I think was my result. And it's a really impressive feature. It's the standout, I think, and what's going to have the most impact for a lot of people who just want to know, do I have hearing loss? Like I feel like I might, or maybe have mild hearing loss. And this will tell them exactly that. It's really impressive stuff.
So the hearing test, it basically what just plays a load of tones in your left and right ear and you say if you can hear it or not?
Yep. It plays, each tone is played in sets of 3. So you hear da da da, and you say yes or no, or you say yes if you hear it and nothing if you don't, obviously. And it recycles sound. So if you think you missed one, like, you don't have to worry. Like, it's probably going to play that one again at some point to give you another shot at hearing it. Because it does take, like, a lot of focus. Like, I was surprised, again, how long it is. But you have to really focus to hear, to make sure you're hearing all of them. And it seems to account for that and account for you getting distracted. And before you take the hearing test, too, it does like the AirPods Pro fit test to make sure your AirPods Pro are fit right and you're using the right ear tip. And it checks your environment to make sure you're in a quiet enough room to hear all the sounds. So for me, I was sitting in my office, and for whatever reason, whether it was the fan or the street noise or something, it said this environment wasn't quiet enough. So I had to go into the bathroom and, like, close the door and sit there and take the hearing test. Like, it seemed really sensitive, which, again, is good. It goes back to them doing as much as possible to make it feel like you're getting a legitimate experience.
And your hearing's good?
Little to no loss is what they said. Okay. I think we all did it in Slack, or all of us with AirPods Pro 2 did it in Slack. And I think our colleague Fernando had the best hearing, and Potuck had the second best. I had the third best, and then Zach had the worst hearing, which doesn't surprise me at all.
I also saw some reports in, like, The Verge and The Wall Street Journal of people who had, like, moderate loss, and they were then using the hearing aid part of the functionality and saying, yeah, yes, it does work. So yeah, it seems like a pretty positive feature and kind of incredible that, you know, these, what, two and a half year old AirPods have now just had so many features added through software that are meaningfully improving the product. It's kind of incredible. This covers up to moderate loss. Like, there's higher levels of audio loss, which include, like, severe and stuff that the AirPods won't even try to attempt to correct for. So you're still going to need hearing aids if you want to do that. But for the milder cases, where I guess the milder cases are people just don't bother wearing hearing aids most of the time. They just kind of live with
mostly,
it.
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah. But now if you're in a situation where you're like, I kind of just want to hear what's going on a bit better, you can just put your headphones in and get clarity in somebody speaking, maybe at, like, a conference or something, or in a big room, or a restaurant or something. And the downsides of AirPods compared to hearing aids are, like, battery life, right? Because AirPods don't last you like 5 hours, where, you know, hearing aids you can keep them for, like, weeks at a time, I think, between charges or whatever, or at least the whole day. But you don't have to worry about going to a doctor. You don't have to worry about getting these things that kind of look weird or look alienating or look like a medical device. AirPods fit in. You know, for better or worse, they're just part of the culture these days, little white buds in your ears. And so it's a great way to get accessible improvements to your hearing for free. It's all free. It could, you know, they could have easily charged for it, right? Like, you could see a different version of Apple charging for this. You could see them running under a subscription if they really wanted to push it. But here it is for you, completely for free. So really, really can't complain.
And all three of these features, hearing protection, hearing test, and hearing aid, are launching next week with 18.1 and an AirPods firmware update. Our colleague Felipe Esposito had a report this week detailing that Apple is working on a dedicated app for games. So an App Store-like app, but solely for games. His report explains it'll integrate things like Game Center, it'll have a Play Now tab for editorial content and suggesting new games. With the Game Center integration too, there'll be leaderboards, achievements, FaceTime and iMessage integration, special events for gaming. So that's something we see in the App Store today, kind of on the main homepage. You'll see, like, if Fortnite has some big gaming app has an
event. They love playing PUBG since Fortnite got
kicked PUBG,
out.
Yeah, PUBG, yeah. If they have a big event or launch or something happening, you'll see it on the main homepage of the App Store with, like, a countdown and stuff. So that'll be in the gaming app, supposedly. Basically, like, a separate App Store, but for games, combining both games from the App Store and also Apple Arcade. It makes sense to me. And Mayo, you pointed out that Apple TV already has kind of a bare bones version of this, which I'd forgotten about.
Yeah, they just have, like, the Arcade tab from the App Store as a separate app, which makes sense on the TV, right? Because you're more likely to play games on there. But they don't do that on the phone. It's only in the tab of App Store. And I think it's a good move. Like, Game Center used to be a dedicated app back in the day, right? They got rid of it and they, like, put all of the functionality of Game Center in settings for some unforsaken reason. Like, it made no sense at all. It's super buried and stuff. They've slowly started, like, pushing Game Center more into the UI of, like, apps. So, like, when you log into your account, you can, like, see the Game Center leaderboard and stuff inside the application, kind of manage your friends list inside the app. But it all feels a bit janky, whatever. Like, having a dedicated games portal makes a lot of sense. And if you're using game controllers, what you really want is like a equivalent to like a launcher for your games that you don't have to like constantly use like the get your like if you're playing like sitting back on your iPad or whatever, you've got your controller in your hand, you play a game, you want to go home. You don't really want to see like the springboard UI if you're holding a game controller. Yeah. You want something more like a what you have on like PlayStation or Xbox, like a game launcher thing, which maybe this app will provide. Like it'd be kind of awesome if you could use the gaming app, which is maybe even landscape rather than portrait, like what the App Store is. So it has your games there, it has your leaderboard. You can like control it with your game controller, play a game, finish playing. You press back, it takes you back to like the gaming portal, and then you can play another game or move on. I think there's a lot of opportunity there to make a really nice gaming experience. And they have a service that has some pretty good games in it called Apple Arcade. And right now it's all kind of like stuffed inside one tab of the App Store. So having a dedicated app with more tabs, more navigation, more options, I think there's a clear runway there for them to do something pretty useful.
I mean, I'm one of the biggest defenders or supporters of Apple Arcade. I think it's highly underrated. And I think one of the reasons it's underrated is people just don't go to the App Store. Like, I don't go to the App Store really to seek things out very often. And splitting things into a separate gaming app, I think, could help raise awareness of what's on Apple Arcade. And the Game Center stuff, too, is interesting because it's for a while, I thought that Game Center was just kind of dead, like on life support, not really getting any features. But when me and Emily started playing Finity, which is an excellent game on Apple Arcade, it was pretty cool. I could see like, oh, she's this far ahead of me. Like I can see the leaderboards for each of the different puzzles and versions of the game, see where I am in comparison to her. And when the day finally came that I passed her on one of those leaderboards, while I was playing, it just popped up with a Game Center notification saying, you just passed Emily. Congratulations. It's like Game Center is still very much a good service and a good feature. It just needs a little bit more promotion. You need to encourage people to use it and to look at it and to set up their profiles. And cramming all of that into a hodgepodge of the App Store and settings is not the best strategy. So yeah, I like this idea. I hope it comes to fruition.
It's the same strategy that they did with passwords, right? Like,
yeah,
pretty decent functionality that for 5 years was built into the settings tab and you had to scroll down to passwords to find it. And now in iOS 18, it's just an app on the home screen. And suddenly a lot more people are like, wow, Apple has a password manager. It's like, yeah, because for whatever reason, if you put an app on the home screen, it gets way more traction than just being buried even one more level deep. And so if they do the same thing with the games, I think they got a real shot. If you go into the Arcade tab on the App Store today on the iPhone, there's like sections for Game Center where you have like recent activity from your friends, people you can add to your friends list, friends leaderboards and high scores and stuff, but it's all kind of intermuddled with everything, and you can just see it'd be a lot cleaner if they could just have dedicated tabs for like, here's your friends. Kind of like what the old Game Center app used to be, that for some reason they killed off entirely. The only question I do have is that the Apple TV Arcade app's quite nice, because if you have a family experience, you can just say, look, just go to the Arcade tab to play some games, and you know you're not going to see the bad games of the App Store, you know, the casino games, the pay to win nonsense, all the advertising. From at least what Felipe described, this new gaming app will have Arcade in it, but it'll also have like all the other games from the App Store, which may be a bit of a downside, because then it's like you can't really just give it to your kid to be like, play games in here, because then they'll like click on stuff that has like in-app purchases and things. Hopefully there's like a clear delineation there, or maybe there's a setting to like hide it or whatever, because this is the same qualm I have with the TV app, I guess, but like, you know, this time it's applied to Apple Arcade. You're paying the subscription. Just show me the subscription stuff. I don't want to see any other nonsense.
I mean, that goes back to one of my conspiracy theories about Apple Arcade in general, is that Apple is so hesitant to push it too much because it makes so much from those casino games for children in-app purchase games on the App Store. Like, that's one of my conspiracy theories. And
they don't want to make it too popular.
Yeah, right. Which, I don't know. It seems plausible to me. I don't know. We'll see.
And it's very true that every Apple event they have, they always have gaming sections now, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they keep talking about it in marketing, but they haven't really done anything on like the OS level to really push it. And this would be a clear venture there. Finally this week, Happy Hour is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help you find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. As you're growing your team, it's so important to have high quality candidates to interview, so you know you're ultimately hiring the best person for the job. and LinkedIn makes it so easy to find them. LinkedIn isn't just another job board, it is ubiquitous and the place you want to be for your job to be seen, with a vast network of more than a billion professionals. I know when my brother was looking for work, LinkedIn is the first place he went to find a job. LinkedIn gives you access to professionals that you can't find anywhere else. In fact, in a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you aren't looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place and missing people. Hiring is easy when you have that many qualified candidates available. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. LinkedIn is constantly working to make their hiring platform even better as well. They launched a feature to help you write job descriptions, which makes the whole process even quicker than before. So join 2.5 million small businesses that use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/happyhour. That's linkedin.com/happyhour to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring the show.
So the new iPad Mini, which is branded iPad Mini A17 Pro, not iPad Mini 7, is available. Hit the stores on Wednesday. And on Tuesday, we got the first embargoed press reviews. There's not a whole lot here, really. It's the same iPad Mini with the A17 Pro this time, with double the storage at 128 gigabytes, with worse colors. Blue and purple have been severely desaturated. They used all the paint on the iPhone 16 colors. The big question going into the reviews, though, was the jelly scrolling effect. So this is when you're looking at the iPad Mini in portrait mode, one side of the screen moves faster than the other, and there's like this wobble effect, that hence the name jelly scrolling. And for the most part, with a few exceptions, the reviews seem to suggest that jelly scrolling is fixed. Jason Snell at Six Colors said he couldn't notice any jelly scrolling, and he specifically said that the new model's display circuitry is different from the old model, as part of Apple's efforts apparently to fix the jelly scrolling problem. David Pierce at The Verge said that jelly scrolling is still very much present on the new iPad Mini. And among the first embargoed reviews, so Snell, The Verge, Federico Vitici, Wired, David Pierce at The Verge was the only one, really, to say that jelly scrolling was still a problem. But then yesterday, once this thing actually launched and some of the broader public got their hands on it, I saw a few videos on Twitter saying that jelly scrolling is still a problem. So I don't know. I don't know what the situation here is. I don't know if jelly scrolling's fixed. Maybe it's fixed a little bit. I do think some of these people are probably conflating jelly scrolling with the general jankiness of a 60 hertz refresh display. They're used to using something with ProMotion, whether it's an iPhone or an iPad Pro. So when they look at the iPad Mini with 60 hertz, they think the lower refresh rate is jelly scrolling. When it's not, that's two different things. I don't know.
It is funny that you can have like the review embargo up and half the people are like, yeah, it's fixed. And then you've got others that are like, no, it isn't.
Yep.
I think if you want to be fair, it's at least been significantly reduced so yes. that mm-hmm. more people can't perceive it. And maybe it depends on the exact type of motion that's going on, depending on how visible it is. The thing that I saw that really convinced me, like, oh, they have actually made a meaningful difference here, is the video from Raphael Zeire, Z-E-I-R-E, yes. that you embedded mm-hmm. on the like roundups thing. And he basically has the new iPad Mini and the old iPad Mini on this animation of white lines and black rectangles going up and down. And you can very clearly see that on the old iPad Mini, there's like a diagonal slant as it's scrolling, which is obviously the jelly scrolling where part of the screen is updating later than the other. And then on the new iPad Mini, the lines are pretty damn straight. So it does seem like that something has actually meaningfully changed there, and it does look, at least on that example, fixed. So if you were really sensitive to the jelly scrolling before, you might maybe go to the Apple Store and try and see one in person, see what it's like. But seems like they've at least tried to fix it. You know, it's not just the exact mm-hmm. same screen. Whether it's completely gone, unclear.
And to be clear, too, jelly scrolling is a problem on most LCD screens, right? It's not mm-hmm. the problem was it was significantly worse on the iPad Mini on the iPad Mini 6 for whatever reason. So if they've made it significantly better and now what you get is just kind of par for the course, normal for this type of display, then there's not much else they can do short of, I don't know, switching to OLED and adding ProMotion, which they should totally do at some point. But that's
the other thing that exacerbated in the iPad Mini is the orientation. They, for mm-hmm. whatever reason, yeah. they made it so the jelly scrolling was like visible in portrait rather than landscape. And because the portrait screen is just smaller in width, it's more easy to see the separation. Whereas older LCD iPads were more landscape products, and that's why it was like hidden more. But also, it was just the fact that for whatever reason, the iPad mini LCD just showed it. It was just more distinct in terms of it being lagging behind. So maybe like the new one is just the kind of same as the older as the other iPads. They kind of brought it up to spec for whatever. It's a weird situation. But if you were really on the fence about buying an iPad mini, it does seem like they've at least 90% fixed it based on the summary of the reviews. Is it still the same screen otherwise? Yes, of course it is. Would it be better if they made an iPad mini Pro with ProMotion and Face ID and all that jazz? Yes, it would be, but that's not what this is. I think this got like, The Verge gave it like a 6 out of 10. Bit mean in my opinion. Like
The Verge review was clear that while this is a good iPad mini for what it is, David Pierce wants more from the iPad mini.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the slant on the review, which is totally fair. Like I agree with David, like, the iPad mini still feels like a second class citizen, still is very much just kind of flying under the radar. And I would love them to do more, but they didn't. And for what it is, this iPad mini A17 Pro is, it's a good iPad mini. You know, it's better to have this than to exist in a world without an iPad mini, which I think was a totally plausible outcome a few years ago.
Yeah, like the Verge review kind of slammed it for only having an A17 Pro chip rather than an M chip. I guess fair compared to like the iPad Air and the iPad Pro, but if you look at the iPad mini line, it's upgrading from an A15. So it's way faster than the old iPad mini is, right? It's not, it doesn't like, because it hasn't got an M chip doesn't mean it's incapable. And so you kind of, a lot of your opinions on the iPad mini will be based on perspective and what you review it, right? As a continuation of the iPad mini line, this seems like a pretty decent update. You've got Apple Pencil Pro support, so you don't have to use the old Pencil anymore. You've got more RAM, you've got more storage for the same price, and you've got 2 years more now modern a chip. Hopefully, another 2 to 3 years down the line, it will be time for the iPad mini to get an even bigger revision. It would be great if they could put Face ID on it, for instance. But as is, I think it's all right and fine and decently priced for what you get.
The ongoing saga of the week has been, will there be an Apple event? Will there not be an Apple event? What is the definition of the word event nowadays? Because we are still waiting on the M4 Max. So that's the 14, 16-inch MacBook Pro, the iMac, and of course the completely redesigned Mac Mini. We're recording this on Thursday. It's about 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. Mark Gurman has reported that Apple has invited creators to some sort of hands-on event in Los Angeles next Wednesday, so 6 days from now. The question that we're all wondering is whether this is going to be something like the Scary Fast event last year, where there'll be invites, there'll be like a central stream at a certain time of day, or whether we might get a video and just some press releases. For the Scary Fast event, Apple did send those invites 6 days beforehand, so that could be, they could come today for something next Wednesday, but with each passing minute, it's looking more and more like these new Mac updates could just be press releases with some sort of maybe videos on YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, today's like crunch time, I guess. If they don't send out invites today, then there's... My definition of event is when people fly to Apple Park and Cupertino, I guess, or another venue like that where they invite a lot of press to one location. And in the post-COVID world, that has meant the Steve Jobs Theater to watch the video and then you get hands-on afterwards.
Yeah. Do you consider the Scary Fast thing an event?
Oh, that's kind of more on the borderline, right? Because it wasn't an event, but they invited people to like the loft in New York or whatever.
Yeah.
But I guess you'd call the iPad event an event when they invited everybody to Battersea.
That's what. What does event even mean? What? Nobody knows anymore.
Yeah.
People to argue about it on Twitter.
My traditional interpretation of event is that you have people come to somewhere for a presentation, which is now watching a video, and then there's a hands-on afterwards. But I guess the thing where they're inviting people on Wednesday to like a creator thing probably isn't identical, because I don't think the creators would watch the video first, right? They just kind of get the briefing and the products and then they move on. So who really cares what the definition of event is? But the Scary Fast outcome could still happen. I think today's probably the last day for that to happen. If we go on to Friday and there's no news on that, then it's not going to happen. Then you have the, is it just press releases? Or do they do what they did, I think, when they last did this, what, like January 2023?
Yeah.
Where they do like, they basically do like an event, a mini event video, but it's not like streamed at a particular time. They just slung it on YouTube when the press releases went out. So if you wanted to, you could watch the YouTube video and basically get a 20-minute product announcement with complete sections that could well be in a streamed video to the same kind of level of production value. That kind of seems like where we're heading, just based on timing, which would be a shame because I think the new Mac Mini is going to be really cool.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it is just a Mac Mini that sells in relatively small volume, so I guess they just can't be bothered.
The one thing that is clear, though, is new Macs are still coming. I mean, next week at some point. Just don't know when or in what form. But yeah, I would be upset, not upset, but bummed if the big redesign, the once in a decade redesign to the Mac Mini is relegated to a press release. But maybe it will be. Maybe it'll be an event. Maybe they'll announce an event by the time you're actually listening to this. Who knows?
Even if they don't invite press to a particular location, they should just like say, we're going to have a video up on Wednesday and have a little countdown. And then
yeah,
it'd at least build a bit more hype for it.
And finally this week, Mayo, you wanted to shout out the Severance Season 2 trailer, which dropped yesterday.
Or at least another teaser trailer, yeah.
Teaser trailer, yeah. So that's set for January mm-hmm. 2025 for release.
Yeah, January 17th is the first episode, yeah, for Season 2, which will be 3 years since Season 1. But I love Severance. I thought it was a great show. Obviously got a lot of critical acclaim and seems to be relatively popular as well, so it's one of Apple's like hits. I know you haven't finished it, right? You kind of gave up on it or something.
I have watched the first two or three episodes twice, I think, and never made it past that point. But my plan, and you gave me this idea, is to start watching Season 1 again and basically force myself to get all the way through it like in early January, so then I can roll right in to watch Season 2 as it airs. Assuming I make it all the way this time.
Or you can wait until like March and watch all episodes of Season 2 in one go. Yeah. That's like, I try not to watch weekly these days. I just kind of, there's enough stuff to watch that I kind of just like batch up and like, you know, mm-hmm. if a show's on, I wait till all the episodes are out and then I work through them. But yeah, you should at least try again with, like, persevere. Like,
yeah.
I agree the start is a bit abrupt and a bit lackadaisical maybe in plot, right, and narrative, yeah. But it the ending is like worth it. They might ruin it with Season 2 because it ends on a cliffhanger and like if the resolution or the continuation is a bit meh, then I guess it's all for nothing. But at least so far Severance is like really up there. It's original, it's different, it's captivating, so I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, they keep teasing us with more teaser trailers.
I forgot, so when they release Severance Season 2 or when they release a new season of any show, they just released the first episode now, right? They don't do the multi-episode drop like they do for a new show premiere.
It's not, they don't have strict rules, but okay. Generally, if it's a brand new show, you get two or three episodes and then weekly for the rest of them. If it's a returning season, you only get one.
Okay.
They have sometimes, and I don't know why they choose this, but sometimes they've done two episodes for Season 2 as well. But I'm anticipating that Severance Season 2 will be one episode a week.
They'll milk it for as long as they can. I mean, that's what you got to do after a 3-year wait.
Go for it, yeah. People love it as well. It's got millions, like, I think that teaser has already got millions of hits everywhere.
Oh, I did finish a big show last week, though. Finally watched Breaking Bad. I don't know if you've heard of it, Mayo, but it's very, very, very good.
Fantastic show. I'm pretty sure I told you to watch Breaking Bad like a year ago, by the way.
Oh, probably. Yeah. The thing, people always say, like, I'll watch something or listen to something and tell them about it, and they'll always say, yeah, I told you about that like 3 years ago. And I say, okay, well, I finally got around to it. Congratulations, you were right.
Yeah, Breaking Bad is, what, 5 seasons? Really good.
Yes, and it just gets better and better. So we would talk about it as I was watching it, and you were super careful not to spoil anything while asking me questions about what I thought. And I think you did spoil a couple things early on, just by mistake. But one thing you did tell me is that your favorite episode was like one of the ones in Season 5, but not the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And you are entirely right about that. I won't say anything just in case somebody else out there hasn't watched it.
Yeah, I don't think that's a particularly original thought. Like everybody kind of agrees, but there's a really good episode in the second half of Season 5, which when it originally aired was split in two, like Season 5 mm-hmm. was split in half. Yeah. But obviously now you can just binge it in one go. And the creator of Breaking Bad, Vince Gilligan, obviously they also did Better Call Saul, which I presume you're going to watch.
I've watched the first episode of it last night. It's good.
Yeah, I don't like it. I like it, but I didn't like it as much as Breaking Bad personally.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want a little Apple thing to close out on, the creator, Vince Gilligan, is currently shooting an Apple TV Plus series starring the female actor from Better Call Saul. So Kim Wexler, which is the character name in Better Call Saul, she is the star of this new Vince Gilligan show called Wicaro, which is currently in production. So that should be out in 2025.
I also need to watch El Camino, the movie.
That's a bit... watch it, because it directly continues from the finale of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a bit rubbish. I don't know. I don't really like it.
I think you're alone in that opinion based on the reviews that I read and the response to when I posted about it on Threads. People seem to like it.
I would rank it last out of the Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul trio.
Well, I will report back sooner rather than later. We'll see if you're right. But for now, I think that does it for this week. You can find an ad-free version of the show at 9to5mac.com/join for $5 a month or $50 a year with bonus content every week. Find us on Apple Podcasts where you can leave a rating and a review. Send us feedback, happyhour@9to5mac.com. I'm on Threads at Chance H. Miller. And Mayo, what about you?
At BZA Mayo.
All right. Thanks, Mayo.
Bye-bye.